We have repeatedly said that you could categorize the first 12 chapters of Romans,
generally speaking,
as content, theology. Starting with chapter 12, though, he turns the corner and goes into almost pure application. A lot of this flows out of the first two verses of Romans. I urge you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Well, that sounds nice. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, what does it look like? And then he starts to tell us. Today, in chapter 13, is where we are. We're dealing with our relationship to the government. This is not going to sit well with a lot of y'all, because I know you. Especially as Southerners. We'd rather fight than switch, right? We got to take this for what it says and take it seriously. And this is where your faith is going to be challenged. You already know what it says. What's interesting that commentators have marveled about for centuries is how Paul is so gushingly positive toward government in light of the fact that the government he was under was the oppressive, abusive Roman Empire that had ceased to be a republic, had become a dictatorship. He doesn't say anything negative about them. There's no caveats. There's no what ifs. There's no yeah buts. It's just positive. And you think, does he have to be quite that positive? But he is. And you think, well, why? And nobody knows why. It could be the Jewish people of the first century were insurrectionists. They were troublemakers. Now, we tend to think of Jews as being downtrodden and oppressed today. But back then, they were looking for fight. And it wasn't too much longer after this, of course, that they just openly revolted against Rome. And it led to that whole big war over there, culminating in AD 70, when God used the Romans to just scrape them off into the ocean. And that was that. The Romans had a pretty short temper when it came to the Jews because of this anti-government feelings that the Romans had. And you remember even in the Gospels, you read about people called zealots. And these are like cloak and dagger guys. They were Taliban of their day. So that might be why Paul wrote it. He's trying to distance Christians, which seem to be somehow related to Judaism. He's trying to distance the church from that attitude that Judaism had. Could be that is why he did that. Don't know. Whatever motivated Paul to do it, the fact is God inspired him to write what we've got to deal with here today. So this has, for some of us, some very hard truths, a hard pill to have to swallow. So let's look at it. Remember, Jesus is Lord over everything, right? Colossians 1:16 says, by him, Jesus, all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. So he's saying that Jesus is sovereign over all these kings and kingdoms and presidents and czars and commissars and everything. And that's the hard pill to swallow. You think, that's not possible. Really? 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 Hitler? Yeah? All right. So let's look. Generally speaking, what relationship should exist between Christians and the government? Romans 13, 1 through 7.
Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience's sake. For, because of this, you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. Render, therefore, to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor.
It's easy enough to see. Our relationship to the government, generally speaking, ought to be one of submission. Titus 3:1, remind them to be submissive to rulers and authorities, to be obedient. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13 says, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and praise those who do good. Now, according to verse 1, who should submit to the governing authorities?
Every soul.
Every person. Why do you think Paul said it that way? Why did he emphasize that every person should be subject? It's easy to imagine you could get these guys in the church. They're new Christians. They understand Christ as Lord of all. And they could start to think that there's a disconnect between obeying Jesus and being submissive to the government. Especially when you look at, for example, the Roman government. That somehow it would be treasonous to God's kingdom to obey Caesar's laws. And so he said every person, and of course he's writing to Christians, every Christian, everybody in the church, should be subject to the government. He does emphasize that. Now, what's another word for be subject to? What's another way to say be subject to them?
Obey.
Yeah, I'll take that. I'm going to tell you the Greek word here just because he's going to contrast it. The Greek word for subject is hupotasso. Hupo means under, and tasso is to arrange. So imagine a pyramid with a general at the top and the lieutenants and the sergeants and on down to the privates. Or imagine an organizational flowchart. You know how those things go? Not like that. It means to arrange under. Get in line, get under the authority of the government is what he's saying. Now, he's going to get another word coming up. He contrasts with that. But that's why I put it that way. Now, how would you define a governing authority? What does Paul mean by governing authority? What do you think? He's talking about a civil authority here, in particular, is what he's dealing with.
Local.
That's correct.
However, since 1780s that we deal with, we also...
We've been given a blessing in that, unlike the Romans, we can participate in causing our government to be the way it is or isn't based on our voting habits or lack thereof. So that would suggest to be a good citizen in our type of government, we need to be informed about issues because you do have a say in what happens. And so by voting, we have the kind of government we deserve. And really, when you look how bad things are in the U.S., it's not that God is going to judge us. We're already under judgment. All this wheels coming off the cars because that's what we deserve. We get what we deserve. And now, when we're talking about government, you're talking about civil authority. And the government is the only entity in our society that can legally use force to hurt somebody that hasn't hurt anybody else. So, for instance, if Ed attacks me and I defend myself and I punch him in the nose, I've used force, but I'm authorized to do it because he's hurt me. See, but now the government, you don't have to hurt anybody and then come hurt you. For example, don't pay your taxes. And you haven't hurt anybody. But the men with guns will come get you, and if you resist, they'll shoot you. They'll hurt you. You see what I'm saying? So government is a protection racket. You know how the mafia works? They go to a businessman. They go, hey, you give us so much money every month, and we'll protect you from all the other criminals. And they will. One time, my stepmom was living down in South America before she married my dad, and the people she was with, they did that to them. They said, you give us money or we're going to steal your car. So he gave them money. And then a week later, the car was stolen. And he complained. And they got a ransom note to get the car back. Well, I paid my money. You stole my car anyway. They washed the car and gave it back to him and apologized because it was a protection racket and they messed up. But if the mafia comes by and you don't give them the money, what's going to happen? They're going to send Guido by. And the same guy that was going to protect you is not going to hurt you. Well, that's for the government. Government says you give us tax money, we'll protect you. What happens if you don't give them tax money? Those same people will hurt you. Now, God has instituted that. They're the only entity in society that legally can do that. Imagine going to Walmart. I mean, the lady's at the door walking to Walmart. And then she says, here's a list of what you will be buying today. You go, I'm not going to buy that. And then she pulls back her apron and there's a 45. She says, yes, you are. Now, I can't do that in my store. I wish I could. Right? Like, Walmart can't do that to you. But the government can. So if you want to compare Walmart to the government, that's exactly what the government does. See, now that's how you start to resent that. Paul says, no, every one of you submit. Because God has made it that way. Now that's a tough reality, but we are fallen creatures. Our society is fallen. And there's total anarchy without government. So the worst of governments is established by God. That doesn't mean everything they do God likes. But the worst of governments is established by God for our good. Look at the good that came from the Roman Empire, as bad as they were. There's the Pax Romana. They ruled with a rod of iron, it says in Daniel. There was peace, general peace, throughout the empire. The Soviets, there was peace in the Soviet Empire. As soon as it fell apart, man, those people were killing each other. There was peace. You could travel all over their empire in relative safety. There's a wonderful road system, wasn't there? They forced everybody to speak the same language. And it wasn't Italian. They were very pragmatic. Greek. And so what happened? You could take the gospel on modern roads in relative safety across international boundaries, no passport needed, and preach the gospel in Greek. They'd understand you. That was for the church. It's good. As bad as other things happened, there was a lot of good there. All right. So Paul gives four reasons in the first two verses why we should be subject to the government. What are the four reasons? Give me a reason based on those first two verses, not one you make up.
Only authority comes from God.
Okay. All authority comes from God. That's one. What's another one? And he says that again a different way in case you missed it. So he instituted it, he appointed them, it all comes from God. Okay, what's another reason?
If you resist the government or the authorities, we're resisting God.
Oh, that hurts. If you resist the government, you're resisting who?
God.
Come on. Really? What's the last reason?
Paul said it, I didn't.
Yeah. What's the last reason?
If bring judgment on yourself.
The last reason he gives in those first two verses is, if you resist, what's going to happen?
Judgment.
You're going to get judgment. From who?
God.
From God. Through who? The policeman. Jesus was on trial before Pilate. And Pilate says, will you not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you? And Jesus said to him, you would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. So Jesus knew that. So test case. Was the authoritarian, slavery-loving, anti-Christian Roman Empire established by God? You better believe it. Was the oppressive Islamic Republic of Iran established by God? Yes. Was the brutal communist dictatorship of North Korea established by God? Yes. So again, God has decreed there shall be government. There is. But that these men abuse their power doesn't change the fact that God ordains government. Now, why do you suppose that Paul does not deal with situations anywhere here where the government persecutes God's people and punishes them for doing good? Why didn't Paul deal with that at all? Because I guarantee you, most of you would. Yeah, but! Why didn't Paul, yeah, but? Why not?
He had a right understanding of God's sovereignty.
He had a right understanding of God's sovereignty. Are there times you should disobey the government?
Yes.
Well, we know that from the Bible, when they tell you to do something against God's law. But I'm back to, why doesn't Paul bother to tell us about that? Yeah. Well, actually, up to this point in writing, the Romans are the good guys in the New Testament. The bad guys are the unbelieving Jews. But the point we need to walk away with is the hard lesson is obedience. The lesser thing is civil disobedience. Those few times you have to disobey the government for conscience sake. The greater problem is Paul was convinced us, obey the law. That's what it comes down to. Now, I don't like a lot of the foolish, silly, stupid laws that get on the books. We're dealing with DeKalb County for 6 months. We can't get in our building because of petty foolishness. Seems like that to me. And it really, it is. But that's the price you pay for having government. And he says, obey. Look, there was this American missionary to Russia who got over there, but he wound up marrying a Russian woman. And they had a family. He's a missionary there. Well, he got killed in 1936, martyred by the Stalinist government. And his son, being Russian-born, was still there as a Russian citizen, and he became a pastor himself. Lived his entire ministry under Soviet rule, and he was a Baptist pastor. And he said this, we obey every law in our land, whether it appears to us to be just or unjust, except when we are told we cannot worship God or obey the Scripture. But if we are persecuted, put into prison or killed, it will be as a result of our faith in Jesus, not because we violated some law in our nation. See, that's the right attitude to have. Tell me again in verse 2, if you resist authority, who are you really resisting?
God.
Now, the word for resist, remember the word for submit was hupotasso? This word is antitasso. See, You're not arranged under. You might resent it, but it's God, government, citizen. That's the way God has set it up. Now, verse 3 and 4, let's look at that again. How can you live free from the fear of authority? And read 3 and 4 again. Okay.
For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you'll receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is a servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer.
If you don't want to fear the government, what do you need to do? Fear God and obey the government. How's that? When do you most dread seeing a police car? When you're speeding! If you're not speeding, then no problem. Ecclesiastes 8:5, he who keeps a royal command experiences no trouble. Based on verse 3, what feeling does God want bad guys to get when they see the popo?
Terror.
Phobos is the Greek word there. Government is to strike fear and terror into the hearts of criminals. How does he describe government officials in verse 4? God's what?
Ministers.
King James says ministers. Other versions say servants. Greek word is diakonos. They're God's deacons. Now, some people, if they don't listen to the minister of the church, God will send the minister of the state to minister to them, you know, if they're rebellious and wild. So he gives two reasons in verse 4 as to how a ruler is God's servant. What are the two reasons? The ruler exists, why?
Bear the sword.
Second reason is he bears the sword to carry out God's wrath on evildoers. That's one reason. What's the other reason?
To do good.
Yeah, he exists for our good. That's right. So even a godless government that persecutes the church, such as in Iran, is nonetheless a minister of God for good, for all the reasons Rusty said earlier. There's this basic right and wrong almost all governments go by. Now, what in verse 4 indicates that God gave government divine authority for capital punishment?
Yeah,
it doesn't bear a taser, it bears handcuffs. What do you use a sword for? That's it. In the Civil War, officers would wear swords simply as a signa of rank. And sometimes if soldiers were running away in retreat and they didn't want them to retreat, they would take their swords and they'd take the broadside of the sword and hit people on the back with them to get their attention and turn them around. But in the first century, Roman soldiers didn't carry rifles, they carried swords. And the only thing a sword is good for is killing someone. Some Christians are non-resistance, pacifists, understand that. But other Christians wrongly apply that to governments. God never intended a government to be pacifist. That's a recipe for defeat and disaster. So, yeah, capital punishment is given by God as something governments can do. So now back to Eric's verse. What's that verse you came to your mind again, Eric? Well, yeah, the law of Moses. Right. Now, when Jesus said, turn the other cheek, that's personal relationships. He says, you don't take your own revenge. We saw that last week. But it doesn't apply to governments. Now, in the pagan governments, if Eric hit Al over the head with a 2x4, that's bad. The pagan government might have said, okay, well, just for that, we're going to wipe out all Eric's family. That's not just. That's overboard. See, so Moses, when he's saying an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, no, the punishment is to match the crime, not worse than the crime, you see. But that's, again, dealing about government relationships, not revenge. So, the government has the power to kill people. Genesis 9:6, whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. And Exodus chapter 21, verse 12, whoever strikes a man so that he dies shall be put to death. So we did see last week, we're not to take our own revenge. We're to leave room for the wrath of God. Based on verse 4, in what form does God's wrath often come? Through the government. There's a fellow in our church a long time ago that got swindled out of a bunch of money. He was agonizing over what to do. Of course, he knew he shouldn't take revenge. He reported it as a crime, which he felt like was his civic duty, because no telling who else was getting swindled. And the government got involved. Anyway, they put him in jail. I guess they put him under the jail. They went away for a long time. Probably still in jail. Well, he didn't take his own revenge, but God's wrath came on those evildoers through the government. And that's the way God designed it. Now let's look at verse 5. Again, he gives two reasons why we should be in subjection.
Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake.
he keeps saying the same thing over and over. Obviously, this is going to be a problem for us. He should be in subjection. What's one reason? To avoid wrath. And the other reason is?
Conscience.
What's your conscience got to do with it? Your conscience tells you when you disobey God, and if you disobey the government, obviously you're disobeying God. That's what he's saying. He's just said, you know now that no authority exists except that God has established. Even DeKalb County government.
You know, he's saying here, if you are likely to disobey the government, then you're more likely, to, your conscience will be dulled so that you don't obey God. Otherwise.
That's good.
You know what I mean?
Thank
you.
You
dull your conscience.
You dull your conscience. Yeah, that's right. So again, 1 Peter 2, be subject, why? For the Lord's sake, to every human institution. You are subject to Caesar for the sake of Jesus. One of the early Christian writers, might have been Tertullian, he's defending Christianity, and he's writing to this Roman official, and he says, Caesar is more ours than he is yours. And he was explaining, we believe God is sovereign over Caesar, and he's put Caesar in power, and submitting to Caesar, we're submitting to Jesus. And that was his logic. Now, the real fun part is how all this relates to paying taxes. Look at verse 6 and 7. He says, for because of this, you also pay taxes. For the authorities are ministers of God attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed. Revenue to whom revenue is owed. Respect to whom respect is owed. Honor to whom honor is owed. So subjection to government means paying taxes. Now, there's a big difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion. You don't have to pay more taxes than you need to pay, because the less taxes you pay, the more money you've got for God's kingdom. But you do have to pay everything that's due. And that's what he's talking about. They tried to trap Jesus, and they said, tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? And Jesus asked for a coin, didn't he? And he says, whose likeness and inscription is this on the coin? And they said, Caesar's. And he said to them, well, render under Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. Whew. So he starts off verse 6. Go look at verse 6 again. He says, because of this, you also pay taxes. Because of what you pay taxes? Because of this what? What's he referring to? Yeah, because of God's wrath, if you don't pay, but higher reason, that's external, internal. Because of your conscience. You submit out of conscience. You pay taxes out of conscience. That's what he's saying. Now notice, he's writing to the church in Rome. And he didn't say you should pay taxes. He says, because of this you do. This is indicative, not imperative. They were paying their taxes. He's assuming they were. And you are to be paying your taxes. If you're Christian, you should be paying your taxes. In the Old Testament, God required tithing, didn't he? He doesn't require that of us in the New Testament. What he does require is you pay your taxes. So you're required to give taxes. Your church giving should be voluntary. Right? He gives another reason in verse 6 why you should pay taxes. What is that reason? Before he said they were servants of God twice. Now he says they're ministers of God. Now this is a religious word. We get a word liturgy from that. And it refers to somebody who does religious service. So a minister of the state, a cop, he might be a jerk. A lot of them are. A lot of them are cops because they like bossing people around. Doesn't matter. You know, you consider him reverend police officer. He is a minister of God. It says they attend to this very thing in verse 6. You see that? Ministers of God attending to this very thing. What very thing? Using the sword to punish evildoers. All right. So even if you disagree with the government, I expect you probably do, you still have to pay taxes. And, you know, Jesus knew that the temple leaders were going to murder him. He said the temple system was corrupt. Probably the 30 pieces of silver they paid Judas came out of the temple treasury. And yet, Jesus paid the temple tax. Yes, the government's going to use your money to pay other people to abort their children.
And also in this country, it is the ballot
box. I'm going to say, you can disagree with me. I'm going to say it's a sin if you don't vote. And I don't just mean vote, I mean be informed and vote. Because we can do our part to help control the type of government we have and what the government spends the money on, how much they take and what they do with it. And I'm going to say we should participate in that system because that's the kind of government we have and that's our civic duty. Other people, North Korea, you don't have that chance. Now, Notice, not only do we owe taxes, but according to verse 7, we also owe respect. Acts 23:5, you shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people. Now, that's a good reminder for all of us, isn't it? So, just to get the big picture on this in the fleeting time we have, David lived this out. Now, he knew God had appointed him to be the king. And Saul was a madman, without cause, trying to kill David, who's on the run. David and his men are way back deep in this cave, and Saul has to go to the bathroom, so he goes in the cave to go to the bathroom, and I don't know how all that worked out, but they said, now's your chance. God has delivered him into your hand. Kill him. David wouldn't do it. David said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed. I don't know how he did it. Saul must have been separated from some of his clothing, but David cut a square out of his robe. And then after Saul left the cave, I guess he got on down the hill and was a mountainous area. David got up where Saul couldn't get to him and starts waving the piece of cloth. And when Saul was out of range, he hollered at Saul and said, look, I could have killed you and I didn't. You shouldn't be chasing me. And David said, may the Lord judge between me and you, and may the Lord avenge me against you, but my hand shall not be against you. So it's one thing if you have to disobey the government because they ask you to deny Christ, but it's not the same thing as armed insurrection, overthrowing the government. 1 Timothy 2 says, not only do we have to obey, not only do we have to pay taxes, but it says, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings, and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life. So you got to pray for them, not against them, for them. I hope you get the point. Submit to the government. I don't see any room here for overthrowing the government. And there's some thorny things here. By the way, in the South, in the Civil War, they said, you know, they always said it wasn't a Civil War, that it wasn't a rebellion, it was a lawful secession. They were claiming that the law of the United States granted us the right to secede. Well, if we can leave England, why can't we leave each other? That was their logic. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but the South did try to say it wasn't rebellion, it was a lawful secession. And I still don't know that gives Southerners the right to shoot Yankees. A lot of people have already lost their business. If you do civil disobedience, you should expect to have the law come against you. God doesn't say you won't go to jail. Look at all the Chinese in jail. But that's not the same thing as armed insurrection and overthrowing the government. We're out of time. Pray for us, Adam, will you?
This message was produced by the New Testament Reformation Fellowship, reforming today's church with New Testament church practices. Permission is hereby granted for you to reproduce this message. You can find us on the web at www.ntrf.org. May God bless you as you seek to follow Him in complete obedience to His Word. May your faith in the Lord Jesus be strengthened and your daily walk with Him deepened.